Hi, and welcome to the 41st episode of the Autoblog Podcast. I'm John Neff.
And I'm Damon Laverance.
And today we will bring you all of the interesting news that happened in the past week, and believe me, there is a lot of news. As a matter of fact, we're not going to get to it all. We only do about a half hour to 40 minutes, and we could probably go on for 2 hours about what happened in the last
There's
week.
There's no way we could cover all this in 30 minutes now. No.
But we'll hit the biggest stuff that affects the industry as a whole, the domestic industry, and of course Ford and GM. But before we get into it, I do want to give Volvo, the sponsors of the Autoblog podcast, a chance to say a few words.
The Volvo XC70 and XC90 deliver the ideal combination of versatility and comfort. They are both rugged and dependable, and come equipped with Volvo's advanced safety features. Visit www.volvocars.us for more information.
Okay, and within the last week, the biggest news by far is the Ford's Way Forward 2.0 plan, or some people call it the Accelerated Way Forward plan. But since we're a computer crowd, we call it Way Forward 2.0. And it came out last week on the 15th. And, of course, we heard what most people expected. Let me give it to you in a nutshell, what the Way Forward 2.0 plan means.
Please.
Everything that they said they were going to do in January by 2012, they're now going to do by the end of 2008. They basically just said, we're going to do in 3 years what we said we're going to do in six. And that includes getting to their goal of reducing their workforce by 30,000 to 35,000, and to do so, they opened it up, the buyout plan, to the entire UAW workforce, 75,000 workers.
And they're due to take that, is it the end of September or October? Oh, everybody has to be out by a certain date. I'm trying to remember what the date was.
I think they have until, I'm not sure. I thought they were going to allow them to go into next year, but I didn't read the fine print enough at the time. But I think what they basically want to have happen is to have the success GM had, because GM very quickly reduced their workforce by 30,000 to 35,000, and Ford needs to have it happen just as quickly, if not quicker by now, because they've already wasted so much time. Mm-hmm. So aside from that, they're going to reduce the white-collar workforce, more salaried workers gone. I think the number was another 14,000. And, of course, more plant closings.
Right. And idlings, yeah.
And idlings. But what I was most interested in, and I did a post on it, was all of the product announcement that Mark Fields revealed during the webcast that he did. Mm-hmm. And let's go through some. Because some of it we've already heard, some of it we haven't.
Right.
First one, completely redesigned F-150 in 2008. I'm not sure if we were all aware that it was going to be completely redesigned. I mean, it's not that old, but this segment is ridiculously competitive at this point. And basically, even if the F-150 isn't that old, 3-4 years maybe.
It depends on the product cycle. I mean, 3-4 years to certain manufacturers is a long time.
In certain segments.
Yeah, and with the F-150, that making up as much of Ford's market share as possible. They need to do something with it, especially with Toyota coming out and GM's products being pretty much new on the road within the next couple months.
The
F-150 has to be competitive. They can't stress how important that piece of equipment is.
Yeah, we posted a while back on Ford starting up a war room for the F-150, and I think they're obviously really serious about that. Even if the full-size truck market shrinks, it's still going to be the bread and butter. It's still going to be the moneymaker. There's too many fleet orders. There's too many commercial orders. Mm-hmm. And there's too many just normal consumer purchases of this truck. I mean, we're talking, you know, even in a bad year when the market settles in this segment, it's still going to be 700,000 units a year, which is ridiculous.
It's the best-selling vehicle in the world, period.
Yep.
And it has been for, you know, how many decades now?
Yeah, exactly. Mm. So we get a all new F-150 in 2008. One new Mustang every year, which we pretty much knew. I mean, they've said so much that they're going to come out with these special edition Mustangs. But they confirmed that the Bullet Mustang would return in 2008, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. I hope it's more than just body work that like it was last time around. But.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like you know the Shelby GT is more than body work, so I think the Bullet will hopefully be more powerful or more potent than the GT.
Mm-hmm.
Redesigned gas and hybrid Escape and Mercury Mariner by early next year. So obviously we know the Escape's going to get the 3-bar grill to kind of match up with the Edge.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, I would hope, if they're going to make a big statement, if there's going to be like a second generation hybrid drivetrain for these things instead of just porting over the current one, I mean, make it better. I mean, that's what Toyota's done with every generation of the Prius, is give it more power, more room, and, you know, better mileage.
Better technology, yeah.
Right. Significant redesigns of the 500, the Freestyle, the Mercury Montego by next year.
And we've already seen the 500 and Spy Shots adopting 3-bar grills, so we know that's going to go through. I'm assuming everything is going to just get copious quantities of chrome like they've been doing recently on the front. So.
Well, yeah, definitely the 3-bar chrome grill. But I think the bigger news with these guys, these cars, the 3.5-liter V6,
yeah,
which is so overdue. I mean, I don't question whether they should have launched it without the 3.5-liter V6, but they
it would
certainly
have been it would have been a much stronger candidate if it was there right
out
of the box.
Yeah, it had a weak launch. It could have had a better launch.
Yeah,
just because it was so underpowered compared to similar vehicles in the same class. I'm really excited about this engine. I'm happy that Ford has a competitive engine in this segment because it hasn't had one for so long.
And it's such a necessity, yeah. And then there's the Focus, which we're going to get a new updated Focus, new exterior styling, but as you noted in the post, not the C1 base model. So there's
yeah,
much
which is
weeping
crap
on this. Yeah, that still pisses me off every single time I see a European Focus. So
I don't think the normal range of consumer knows that there's a better Focus out there somewhere in the world, or that their friend's Mazda 3 is basically, you know, a better Focus. Yeah. But you know, the C1 will come. It's just not coming yet. The Lincoln MKS, the all-wheel drive big Lincoln, will arrive in 2008, and it's going to have a 3.7-liter V6, an exclusive, which is interesting. That's good. I mean, I'm kind of sad this car looks like a Japanese. Like, it looks like an Acura, quite honestly.
The headlights being pulled kind of taut back over the fenders and all that. No, there's a very, very distinct Acura and just generally Japanese influence there. Yeah.
It doesn't have any American heritage penned into its design.
Which is really sad for Lincoln, because that's what they should be banking on right now, you know?
Right, exactly. But I do like the fact that it will have its own exclusive engine that's a pretty decent size. I mean, if the 3.5 liter is making 265 horsepower, we could expect this to make just short of 300.
Right. And by the way, on the Lincoln front, we should mention that you and I talked last time about the Town Car being possibly killed off. And that's no longer going to happen. They're going to keep it around.
Yeah, which is, of course they are. I mean, they're no matter what happens in the next 10 years, they will be producing the exact same Town Car and the exact same Ford Crown Victoria they are today.
Yes.
If they have to set up a plant somewhere just to produce these vehicles, they will. The installed user base is too big. The dealer service network is too large. There's no other car in the world. Chrysler 300C doesn't matter.
Nope. Or the Charger.
The Charger. Mm-hmm. They just can't replace all of these cars and the whole network that's set up and the livery and delivery service. It's just not going to happen. The Fairlane concept, we already knew that too.
Yeah, that was coming. That was obvious, yeah.
Which is going to be a larger crossover than the Ford Edge. It's going to have 3 rows of seating.
How much do you think of the concept is going to carry over?
I would say a good amount. I would say definitely the basic proportions of it. Where the Edge has a very raked windshield and also a very forward-leaning D-pillar.
Right.
I think this one it will have a similarly raked windshield, but more of an upright D-pillar. So it's going to have that more large wagon stance. And, you know, I'm kind of thinking in my head a more boxed off Chrysler Pacifica kind of thing.
Okay, yeah. Which this is really, really well timed. If they're looking at 2008, that's just about the time the new Chrysler minivan is going to be coming out, and that'll be a pretty good competitor with it. And somebody else coming out with a minivan. Is it GM that's due for a minivan pretty soon? Or have they cut off their minivan altogether?
GM will be replacing its minivans, I believe, with the Lambda platforms, with the GMC Acadia, Saturn Outlook, all full-size crossovers. So it'll be interesting to see where the minivan goes and how far that gets kind of segmented and fractured.
Right.
Because right now, I mean, the term CUV covers so many body styles.
Oh, absolutely.
It's just ridiculous. It's getting really out of hand, but...
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, basically large CUVs seem to be encroaching on minivan sales a lot.
On the safety front, which I thought was really, really interesting, stability control on every model by 2009, and as well as sidecar and airbag standard on every model by 2009.
Well, Ford was kind of smart too, because they came out and announced that a few days before the, I don't know what federal body was voting on it, Congress, whatever, basically voted to have stability control standard on every model across every brand sold in the United States. And we already knew they were going to vote on it, and Ford just came out a few days beforehand and said, we're just going to put it on everything. And I think a few other companies did that as well. Chrysler came up and touted who invented stability control, which was Mercedes-Benz.
Right.
So yeah, that was a little flurry of activity last week too. And side curtain airbags, the safety, standard safety. You know what I thought of when I saw that about the safety was I thought of, Hyundai. You know, you have to compete with Hyundai now in the safety front.
It's really funny. I was actually having a conversation about that earlier today with, you know, if Hyundai's got to compete, which they've done, they got to bring, you know, quality, and they got to bring low price, and they also got to bring safety. And you look at any safety list, and you see Hyundai right at the top there, five stars across the board in a lot of their models. So,
And Ford, too. I mean, ever since Ford acquired Volvo, and even a little before, they've concentrated a lot on safety, and you're very surprised when you see a Ford vehicle at this point getting, you know, nothing but four stars or top pick or whatever. So Ford's been doing very well when their vehicles were optioned up with the safety equipment.
Exactly. But of course, when the Fusion went through the IIHS crash test, it did really, really poorly on side impact. But as soon as they put the side curtain airbag on there, they asked them to redo the test, and it came out. I think it, I wrote the post, and I think it was whatever the average was or somewhere in that acceptable, I think it was.
So I guess the real question is, is there anything in the list of product that Mark Fields announced or that we know of coming down Ford's pipeline that we think is going to be the product that leads the turnaround?
Short answer, no. I don't see anything on there that I can get really, really excited about that I think is really going to be a big step. Even if the, you know, even if they would have put something to replace like the Ford GT, I'm not seeing anything that from a consumer point of view is really going to spur people on. I just don't see it.
I'll throw in 2 points here.
Please.
One is that I have a lot of hopes for the Ford Edge. The only problem is that it's not going to be a Taurus. It's not going to be an Explorer.
No.
It's the Taurus and the Explorer both.
They dominated the segment.
There was nothing else there.
Yeah.
They came out early enough to literally lead the segment. They mainstreamed the segment. They brought it. They made it popular.
Nobody's done that yet with the CUV, though.
No, and I don't know if the Edge is going to do that. And, but the CUV craze has already begun. There's already too many.
Right, but there's none that are actually leading the pack. There's not one CUV that people would see, recognize, and say, hey, that's a crossover.
No.
That's the next step up. So,
and I think in the segment you're always going to have that problem when you can call, you know, a Chevy HHR a CUV and a Nissan Murano a CUV, and they really don't look anything like each other.
Absolutely not.
The segment is almost too broad to have any one vehicle dominated, but I think the Edge will go a long way in showing a stylish Ford, an affordable Ford where you get a lot of standard. I think it'll do well. And that being said, I had a discussion with Chris Ciccone, who's the editor over at AOL Autos.
Oh, yeah.
And we had this big discussion about how literally you could take And I believe it was with him. It could have been with you for all I can, for all I remember. Remind me if it was. But anyway, we were basically saying that you could take Ford's European lineup,
yeah,
take out that Ford Fusion little SUV thing they sell over there, and bring over everything else: the Ka, the Festiva, the Fusion.
Right. The I'm sorry,
the Eurofocus, the right. Mondeo.
All
bring those over, and you would kill. I mean, you would, if Ford brought, literally just plug and play their European lineup, they would just dominate. I don't know why it seems like forever that seemed like such an obvious play. I mean, nobody's ever done that before.
There's got to be a reason, because Ford doesn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, well, I'm sure there's production.
For Opel. Yeah.
I'm sure there's production reasons and you know, maybe they're not designed to safety
or,
and emissions.
Right.
But literally, just from a dynamic driving perspective, which, you know, the Fusion over there, the Mondeo over there, the Ka,
right,
all of them are spoken of very highly in terms of performance and handling.
And especially with the redesigned Mondeo coming out, that would fill a slot where the Taurus is missing. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Gorgeous.
It looks really, really pretty. That would fill a slot where the Taurus used to be. That would be a vehicle that could probably compete with the likes of, you know, the Camry and the Accord.
Well, and the problem is that I think Ford's problem in their lineup is that already they have too many models.
That's
and
what I was
going to. I point right at the Fusion and 500.
Okay.
In my eyes, those should be one car, not two. They should be...
They divided the Taurus thing. You've got the smaller, you've got the larger, but there's nothing right in the middle. And no, that's a really, really keen observation, because of the fact that there's really nothing in the middle there, they should be the same product.
And the money is in the middle. In the middle is where the Accord and the Camry...
Right.
And even the new Sonata compete. The Fusion just looks like it's smaller... A little nichier, and it may not even be. I don't even think it is that much smaller at all. But it just it seems like it's straddling between a Contour and a Taurus.
Yeah. But the thing is, if Ford does it, and they won't, of course. But if they do decide to bring over everything from Europe, they will have to kill off so many different models that are currently in play here. But if they did bring everything over from Europe, like you pointed out, they would have a dog in every fight. They've got the Ka, which would be a direct competitor with all the B segments, the Fit,
which
the Yaris,
so
the Versa, which they don't have yet, and it's such an obvious thing, because the Ka has been around for, it's got to be a decade now, right? It's got to be at least 10 years. That seems like such an obvious choice for them to bring over, especially now when, you know, the F-150 might not do as well. They need to have something that's going to be able to fill a little bit more market share. So,
well, and you take the Ka and the Fiesta, both two very small cars below the Focus. Pick one of them. I mean, pick the Fiesta because it's a little larger.
They need to bring both over. Just one. Yeah, exactly.
Right. And you know, the profit margins on these small vehicles are tiny, but, you know, if you're producing it globally, the economies of scale, I would think, would have to be pretty good.
Yeah.
And obviously the Mini has proven you can sell a premium small car.
Yes.
So,
as long as it's got some cachet to it, yeah.
I mean, we're talking fantasy here, because Ford's going to do nothing. I mean, they have said they will take B and C platform cars from abroad and bring them over here by after 2009. But
we're talking 3 years away, yeah.
And we're assuming that I'm assuming they're just talking about the Eurofocus. I'm not assuming that they're talking about the Fiesta or the Ka, which they should be. I mean, that's where they should get their small car.
Right.
But all right, okay, we've spent way too much time on WayForward 2.0. The day that WayForward 2.0 came out, Chrysler, a little sneaky.
No, it was so sneaky, it was obvious. That was the problem.
Yeah, exactly. Literally hours after Ford announced their new WayForward plan, Chrysler popped out and said that their quarter three loss, they expected to be larger than they estimated by $1 billion. So they're expecting the Chrysler Group's loss to be $1.5 billion instead of the 0.5 that they had estimated. Lots of reasons for this. Of course, high fuel prices, because that's the scapegoat for everything at the moment.
Right.
lack of a small vehicle lineup, which is a giant gaping hole in Daimler or the Chrysler Group lineup.
Yeah,
the Dodge Caliber
there.
Is not... It's a small-ish car, but it's not a small car. That's
oh, it's
not
the crossover.
Right, exactly.
Because anything with five doors is automatically a crossover. It doesn't matter what it is. Yeah, that's...
And the last reason is high legacy costs, which, of course, got to blame the unions too.
Right.
They have very high health insurance costs. So I don't have too much to say about this other than sucks for Chrysler. I mean,
yeah, well, once again, you know, they don't have anything. They don't have a small car that's in their lineup, which they need to have. The talk of Smart coming over, that's the only thing that we really see in the on the horizon that's going to fill that market. But
that's a little too niche-y. That's
yeah, exactly. And that's the thing is that's not going to have the broad market appeal as a Mini, or even if, you know, Ford brought the Ka over, or, you know, Yaris Fit, whatever. When are they looking to get back to profitability?
They say, I'm going to quote them, they are striving to achieve a profit in Q4, which, you know, I've been reading these press releases about sales for long enough now that there's a lot of spin that goes on in these things. And
yeah.
Of course they're going to say they're striving to achieve a profit in Q4. I would hope that they would strive to achieve a profit
exactly.
in every quarter. So by telling me that, that doesn't tell me anything about whether they think they will or they won't.
No.
And
how are they going to go from $1 billion to, you know, black ink in that small amount of time is beyond me.
So we'll have to wait. They do have a lot of product coming down the line, but again, it's large crossovers and small SUVs. And
there's really,
you know,
nothing that's of note. The Sebring, what else is going to be unveiled in? Or what's going to be unveiled in Paris?
Sebring sedan.
There's supposed to be a coupe unveiled in Paris.
The Dodge Avenger, which is the Dodge version of the Chrysler Sebring sedan. And what was the other thing you just mentioned?
The Chrysler Sebring was supposed to come out. They might debut a coupe version of that in Paris, but that's just
a coupe version. Yeah, I would have thought we would have seen something by now if that was going to come. But
yeah. At least a spy shot of some kind. But
yeah.
Yeah, but no, there's really not. Once again, it's product, and what's the other thing? Oh yeah, product. They're just product. They just seem to be lacking, unfortunately. So
it's all about the product.
But speaking of great mergers between Daimler, Benz, and Chrysler, breaking news this morning: Automotive News, rampant speculation that they've got their sources, and as I'm saying that, I'm making the quotation marks with my hands. That we're speculating that GM and Ford were looking to merge, and
or form an alliance.
Yeah, no, that was
whatever those two words mean.
Everything was, and that's the point. Everything with this story was so obtrusively vague. I mean, it was so bad. And I'm reading through it, and I would ask everybody to go to The Truth About Cars and read Robert Ferraro's take on it, because he had it up this morning at like 9 a.m. So he obviously was burning the midnight oil last night writing up his review. Everything I wanted to say in the post I was writing up last night at 1 o'clock in the morning, he said in his article. Who would benefit? What would happen? Why would anybody want to do this? The Wall Street Journal opened this up back in, was it July? If I recall, there was one column. They said, one of the columnists said, you know, Ford and GM should hook up, and here's why. And you know, if one of them goes down, it's going to be horrible for the economy, right? But if both go down when they're linked together, I mean, catastrophe is such an understatement. I mean, such an understatement.
Well, I think you know, it may be a fact that in July, either Ford contacted GM or GM contacted Ford, and they're stating this was very soon after Ghosn and Nissan originally approached GM about an alliance or a merger.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the article was super vague, so it may be a fact that it happened. This throwing around the words alliance and merger, I don't think whatever happened had anything to do with them talking about merging in the sense that Daimler-Benz and Chrysler merged.
Yeah.
They're not talking about joining forces and throwing Chevy badges on Fords and Ford badges on Chevys.
Yeah.
If anything, these two companies already work together. I mean, they co-developed that 6-speed transmission that's showing up in both of their vehicles now. They did that together.
Right.
So if anything, I think they may have talked about, okay, what more can we do together to you know, help each other out, reduce R&D costs and manufacturing costs, or they are in a situation where they know if one goes down, the other goes down too. I mean, they're so tied together in their supplier base and the UAW in all these different ways that GM knows that if Ford goes down, no matter how well their turnaround's going, they're going to get creamed.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense for these companies to get together every once in a while. And, you know, not you know, collude or
they're
do
not
anything.
Gonna right, they're not going to share P&Ls, but no, there needs to be some conversation between the two of them to see where the other's at and see what, if anything, they can do to not help the other one out, but make sure everybody's staying on the level.
Right. They have mutual interests in keeping the UAW in check. Mm-hmm. They have mutual this is the biggest mutual interest in changing the perception, the image of the domestic auto industry.
Yeah.
Chrysler has opted out of the domestic auto industry.
Altogether,
they have,
yes.
They have basically said, we're not a domestic anymore. We feel our German roots and we revel in our hybridness, our multiculturalness. So I think Ford and GM both know they are in this little domestic boat together. So when people go around saying domestic suck and quality sucks and design sucks, I think it behooves Ford and GM to get together and say, we need to change that perception because it's in both of our interests to have people in this country think domestic cars are good. So
yeah,
if they can get together and somehow say, you know, let's blow the American horn and, you know, mm-hmm. and get out there in front of it, I think that's what these presumed or talks boiled down to. I don't think it was, you know, let's join forces and
right.
make the biggest company on earth.
And would it even be legal? I mean,
yeah, exactly.
there's just the legality aspect of that. I mean, I can only imagine the congressional hearings that would take place if something like that was even thought about seriously.
Yeah, if they were one company, it would be something like 40% market share or something like that in the U.S.
That's not healthy. That's not right. No, not at all. And there were the initial conversations between the two CFOs, and I firmly agree with everything you said. I'm sure they were sitting down just saying something needs to be done about certain things domestically. We need to change certain things, and that was about the extent of it. It just seemed irresponsible. This whole thing from the beginning to the end seemed irresponsible, and I think it's going to float away within the next 2 days. I'm just glad. I haven't had the chance to turn on the TV and watch anything CNN or MSNBC or Fox News and see, you know, how the pundits are, you know, jumping on each other at this
you
point.
You know, I watched, I think, the World News Tonight on ABC. They didn't mention it at all, and it's funny because last week when Ford's Way Forward plan was going on, that was all over the news.
Oh,
it was on the local news. It was on the national news.
Right.
And you'd think something like this would gain some traction in the national media, but it really didn't. And, you know, I mean, we post on everything, and it's almost crappy when, I mean, you read the headline and you're like, it's, you know, a very sensational thing to lay your eyes on.
Right.
So we have to post on it, and I think everybody in the blogosphere and on the internet kind of shot holes through it, either overtly like Robert Farrago or subtly saying, you know, this is bullcrap.
nobody expects this to happen. By lunchtime today, it was a joke. There was no doubt at all. The people I was talking to and everything that came out, we were just chuckling about it because we know it was just so full of hot air. So anyway, well, moving on.
Since it is full of hot air, we will move on. I wanted to bring up this little post we did because I was so proud of it.
You love this so much.
I do. I don't know. I guess we should preface this by saying a good number of us who do Autoblog do so on Apple computers. I'm a diehard Mac fan. You have a Mac.
Yes.
Seven, eight
years strong now, yeah.
A couple others have Macs, and then the rest of us are on Windows, and we have little fights and make fun of each other. But we had an Autoblog reader send a tip in, and he had noticed that not in this last keynote that Steve Jobs did for Apple, but the one before that where he was demoing the next version of OS X, the operating system.
Yeah.
He noticed that when Steve Jobs pulled up his mail program on the big giant monitor behind him to do a demo, he noticed that Autoblog had two messages in Steve Jobs' inbox on this giant screen in the keynote.
Right.
And it was like the subject of both emails were post titles. So we think that he was demoing the RSS feed function for the next Apple Mail program.
That's pretty sick. All
right. Right. So that he had our RSS feed pumped into mail. So anyway, on this giant, you know, in the keynote for Apple, in the background, was Autoblog. And, dude, I was so proud. That was, like, the only thing better would be able to to go to an Apple keynote one day, but that was pretty damn cool.
Or if you would have clicked on the email message and our text would have appeared, that would have been, you would have
awesome.
You would have lost it right there, I'm sure. But no, that was really, really cool. And from what you wrote, he's kind of a car freak, right?
He is a car freak. He's a big Mercedes fan. He has I don't know what kind. I think a CL AMG.
Nice.
And it's very interesting because he's one of a select group of people in California who, by law, have been granted the ability not to have a license plate on his car because people just steal it. His license plate was stolen so many times that he got permission to not have one. And for a long time, people thought he just drove around without a license plate and all the cops just knew who he was. But he actually has, if you look on the picture we put up, he has a little barcode, just a little teeny barcode sticker where his license plate should be. Yeah,
that's
very
really
cool.
Odd. Was it like a personalized plate? Was it a vanity plate that was getting stolen, or was it just a random plate?
He as from what I could tell from the pictures I've seen of his car is that he just parks it in the Apple parking lot, which isn't guarded.
Okay.
So you know you could walk in and bloop, jack his license plate and.
And have a little souvenir for your time. That's nice.
Right, and I think a lot of people were doing that. So he got this permission. And I guess a few other big names in California have been granted permission to do this too. And he is one of them because he's larger than life and he is an autoblog reader. We count Steve Jobs among us. So that's pretty sweet.
So one more fun thing before we go. Can you actually lease a Bugatti Veyron?
You can indeed. And I will tell you what the conditions are. So your one option is to buy a Bugatti Veyron for $1.4 million. Or you could lease one. And if you'd like to lease one, you will need a $400,000 down payment.
Okay.
Which I could name any number of supercars that you could buy with that amount of money.
Yes. Two in some cases, yeah.
Yeah. And then you will have to scrounge up about $24,000 a month for lease payments.
Check. All right.
And this isn't a short lease. They want you in it for the long haul, so it's a 5-year lease. You have to pay $24,000 a month for 60 months.
Wow.
But, you do have 2,500 miles that you can drive in 1 year.
2,500? Wow.
The average is usually 12,000 to 15,000 a year for a normal car. But this one, you have 2,500 miles you can drive a year. So, and I don't know what the penalty is for
going over that mileage, right?
I can't imagine what it is per mile. It's probably like $400 a mile if you go over.
The three things I didn't see in the post, though, is what about maintenance? what about insurance? And then the other one, which was obvious as soon as I got done reading it, was like, well, what about a buyout price?
When you're done with the lease, you will have spent $1.8 million. So you will actually have gone over
the 1.4
actual cost,
right.
Yeah. I guess the place doing this is Putnam Leasing.
Yeah.
Which I guess are located in, or one of their places is located in Connecticut, I know, around Greenwich, because there's a lot of exotic car and supercar dealers right there.
Right.
And basically I went to their website, and their shtick is basically, we will help you lease anything. You know, obviously there is no official Bugatti leasing structure.
No, of course not, yeah.
But they basically say on their website, we will help you lease any vehicle you want. And for somebody who really likes leases, for some reason, they can do it.
Beyond us.
I would not recommend it. I plan on just buying my Bugatti and laying cash down, but that's me. I'm not a lease person.
Right.
So.
And we also don't have that kind of money to spend on something like that, so we really don't know what we speak of anyway, so.
No, and yeah. I've never even been near one yet. Hopefully I will, though. In Paris, they should have one, so. Hopefully I'll get to cozy up to a Bugatti Veyron when I'm in Paris, which is next week.
That is next week.
The Paris Motor Show is next week, and I really am not a fan of international travel, so I'm not looking forward to it. So,
and,
we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, so are we expecting to do a podcast next week sometime, or are we going to wait till after the show?
No, we'll do one before the show, because I imagine there's going to be a lot of stuff that comes out this week.
Yeah.
Really, early releases and things like that. Mm-hmm. Hopefully Ford will release some official information on the Mondeo that's going to be introduced there.
The scans we saw today were really, really pretty. They were. So much of that was borrowed off of, what was the concept that came out last year?
Oasis? No. Orisis? Something.
Isis?
Isis, yeah. Well, yes. What am I talking about? I was there. That was my favorite. That was my favorite concept of the Frankfurt mm-hmm. show. That was a beautiful, beautiful car. But yeah, I'm not looking forward to the Paris show at all. One reason is because unlike the Detroit Auto Show, where the press conferences are like half hour to 45 minutes long, you sit down, it's nice and comfy. In Paris, there's 2 days of press conferences, and the first day, it's 15-minute press conferences, one after the other, for like 9 hours.
Oh, good lord.
And I'm like, 15 minutes? What can you unveil in 15 minutes, man? At the Detroit show, there's like a band, and they play a song, and Ava Longoria comes out, and they shoot confetti. And I'm like, you can't get any of that theatrics in 15 minutes.
No, but you're also in Paris. You don't expect that kind of theatrics. In the U.S., absolutely, those theatrics
over the
are
top.
Expected, but exactly.
So we'll see, although we'll have coverage coming fast and furious all day long, so and kill ourselves trying to get it, but that's what we do.
Exactly.
Okay, well, we could talk for about another 2 hours, but we're not going to, because I want to go to bed and you have to go do some posting. So
yes, absolutely.
So we will take leave of you, but before we do, want to give Volvo, the sponsors of the Autoblog podcast, a chance to say a few more words.
The Volvo XC70 and XC90 deliver the ideal combination of versatility and comfort. They are both rugged and dependable, and come equipped with Volvo's advanced safety features. Visit www.volvocars.us for more information.
Okay, and before we leave, as always, I want to remind people that they can subscribe to the Autoblog podcast in iTunes. Just do a search for Autoblog and you should find us. And please visit autoblog.com and autobloggreen.com every day while you're at work.
Religiously.
It usually helps if you just visit every hour because there will be lots of new stuff every hour. And also want to remind people, too, if they have cool rides of their own sitting in their garages, to submit them to our reader ride of the day, which you can find if you go on autoblog.com. In our list of categories, you'll see RR of the day, and that's reader rides of the day. And we've got tons of submissions, tons of awesome cards, and we're having a really,
really
good
time. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, a quick shout-out to our new writers.
Yeah, we should welcome... Well, the first writer we took on was Frank Filipponio, and hopefully I'm pronouncing his last name right.
Close enough.
Yeah, and we also have Noah Joseph, who has been doing a great job, and also the return of Randall Helcom, who was with us last year and had to leave us for a while. And he's back and doing better than ever.
He got his priorities straight, so we're good.
Yeah, got his priorities straight and returned. Lots of new writers. And if you're noticing, we've already had a few readers notice, we are producing a lot more posts than we have ever. We're hitting 30 posts a day, and hopefully we'll have more soon. There's more than enough information out on the web to keep bringing you guys stuff throughout the day. So keep checking, and we will keep putting new stuff up. So, until next week, we will see you later.
Have a good week.